Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now is candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Lon Johnson. Welcome back to the program, Lon.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
This has got to be a busy time for you, I know. It's such a big district, too, to try to visit so many places.
Absolutely. And, it's 32 counties, and we've been holding town halls all across the district, and, we're down to the home stretch here in this election.
Any change in how you go about this from when you're running in the primary to the general election?
No. It's about going out and introducing yourself to voters, telling them who you are and what you want to do when you get there, when you get to Congress.
Well, let's talk about what are issues that are important to you. What are you telling people?
Well, I grew up, with the value, learning the values of working hard and playing by the rules and never giving up. Those were the values I learned from a family with 5 generations of Northern Michigan history. I'm the 5th generation of my family to live in Kalkaska County. You know, those values saw me through a life of work. I was one of the first in my family to graduate from college. I was in Iraq as a civilian in 2005. Came home in 2006. Married my wife in Northport, worked to invest in and grow U.S. manufacturing companies.
What were you doing in Iraq?
I was there as a civilian. My job was, I was there with an organization called NDI. It was a government-funded program to help build a political infrastructure. So I worked there on the constitutional and the parliamentary elections and then helped set up political infrastructure, parties, candidates, that sort of thing. The thinking, working with, I was about 50 miles south of Baghdad. Hmm. We need to take those, I want to take those values to Congress to do 3 major things. Number one, we need a better government. We need a government that's every bit as honest and hardworking as the people who pay for it. That's us. And we're not getting that. That means we need to bring back civility, common decency here. We've got to stop this partisan bickering. It's wrecking our country. We need trade deals. We need to stop these trade deals that are shipping our jobs overseas. This TPP trade deal was negotiated in secret, and it doesn't address some of the major items that are responsible for shipping our jobs overseas. We need campaign finance reform. We got to drive we got to drive corporate money out of politics. This is we're seeing millions and billions being poured in by God knows who. The second thing we need to be focusing on is keeping us here in the UP both beautiful and profitable. We were surrounded by beauty, but we have to make a living. That means continued sustainable logging, sustainable mining, but also means protecting our fresh water. We've got 21% of the world's fresh water right here. The 1st Congressional District has the most fresh water of any district in America, and we have an obligation to protect it.
And this is one of the issues that you've brought up numerous times. You're pretty adamant about the shutting down of Enbridge.
No, not of Enbridge.
Of the Line 5.
I'm for shutting down the Line 5 pipeline at the Straits of Mackinac, not closing it down in the UP. There's a difference.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to oil, and pipelines are the safest way to move oil. We don't want oil shipped on trucks or boats or trains. We want that oil. Pipelines are the safest way to move oil. We need to build more pipelines. We need to build more energy infrastructure, not less. However, here we've got a 63-year-old oil pipeline running through the Straits of Mackinac that hasn't been independently tested. I've been very consistent. We need to shut it down. We need to independently verify that it's safe. And we need to work with the Governor's Pipeline Task Force to find alternative pipeline routes to move this oil. We can shut that down without interrupting propane supply as well. That's very important here, obviously, as in the UP. But that pipeline transports that propane to just outside of to Rapid River. The propane is extracted at Rapid River for the UP. It's 120 miles west of the pipeline, of the Straits. So we can shut the pipeline down at the Straits of Mackinac and continue shipping propane with that pipeline.
Now, Enbridge has actually been, found in non-compliance with some of their things that they had said previously that everything was fine. Does that concern you?
Absolutely. Look, when it comes to our Great Lakes, trust must give way now to vigilance. We have, you know, we have this pipeline that's being run by the same people who were responsible for the largest pipeline disaster in U.S. history, in Kalamazoo River, in 2010. You know, we're being told this pipeline's safe by the same people who were told us the Flint water crisis. You know, the Flint water was safe. We need to shut down Line 5, independently verify that it's safe, and then let's get to work with the governor's pipeline task force to find alternative routes for this oil. And let's build another pipeline.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was you and I that were talking one time, and it was the idea of why don't they build a new one? You know,
yeah.
It was like, you know? Well, I guess that might make a little bit too much sense to, you know, build a new one that's not.
I'm not against pipelines. Pipelines are the safest way to move oil, but there are smart places to put a pipeline and not so smart places. And the Straits of Mackinac, not a smart idea. I would not recommend, though, we put another pipeline into our Great Lakes. All we're doing is kicking down another problem 50 years down the road for our kids and grandkids.
Another issue that has been important for both you and your opponent, Jack Bergman, in this race, talking about Social Security and also with medical insurance, the Affordable Care Act, what to do with what people call Obamacare down the road. Let's go ahead and start with Social Security. We all know that it's a concern. How do you see it?
Well, you know, Social Security is a promise that we must keep. It's a promise. Social Security was something that is something that people paid into, and they've earned it. This is not some government giveaway. The promise of Social Security must be kept. Now, there are some, though, in Washington, and Jack Bergman, my opponent, is one of them, wants to move Social Security over to Wall Street, wants to privatize it. You know, look, Social Security works. It's been there through thick and thin for us, through wars, through recessions, stock market crashes. We've been able to rely on Social Security. And I believe that, and it's yours, and you earned it, and you paid into it. I believe that if you were to ship that to Wall Street, all you're doing is interjecting a middleman in there and allowing somebody to profit off what you've paid into and what you've earned. You know, there's millions of dollars here at stake, and billions, arguably, with fees, stockbroker fees and banking fees and so forth. We don't need that. You paid into that system, and it needs to be there when you retire.
Now, Lon, I've been told since I think I was in high school that by the time I graduate, there won't be any Social Security left. It'll all be spent. It'll be all replaced with IOUs. Talk to me. Tell me if that's not true.
Look, Social Security, there's been, ever since its inception, there have been people who have been using scare tactics to scare people against Social Security. We do need to make sure that Social Security remains solvent. That has to occur. We need to make sure but the answer here isn't moving it to Wall Street. The answer isn't extending retirement age. That's wrong. The answer isn't bringing down the benefits paid out. That's not the answer. But we need to make sure that our Social Security promise is kept, and it will not happen. You cannot ship this to Wall Street.
Anybody that had a 401k about 8 years ago knows, you know, what could happen to your retirement savings if it's invested into various stocks, you know, no matter how safe you try to make it. Is that what we're looking at if it's moved over and then invested as opposed to a government program?
You know, I'll let my opponent speak to what he means by privatization. But look, moving, you know, he said on numerous occasions that he seeks to privatize. And I'm opposed to it. You know, Social Security, we need to make sure that we keep the promise of Social Security.
Moving on to the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. There are people that are for it, people that are adamantly against it. Some say there's parts of it that are good and some parts that need to be tweaked. I'm just a layman. I work at a regular job and I get paid. I know that my insurance premiums have gone up. So what do I have to look forward to?
Well, we need to constantly be working to improve, lower the cost, and improve the quality of healthcare. We've got to stop playing politics with healthcare. Now, this Congress has voted now, I think, over 50 times to repeal it. It hasn't been repealed. It's not, you know, the Senate and the House have voted. It's not going to be repealed. So let's roll up our sleeves and let's get to work and let's fix this. There's a number of things we can do. Number one, we have to allow Medicare the ability to negotiate with drug companies. That will bring down the cost of prescription drug companies. It's insane that Medicare cannot negotiate with pharmaceutical companies to get, you know, use their bargaining power, you know, their purchasing power to bring down the costs. You know, if you would allow Medicare to negotiate with drug companies, you would save, you know, I've read estimates anywhere from 20 to 30%, $14 billion with a B, a year. So we need to allow that to happen. Number two, we got to make sure that Medicare does not be turned, cannot, is not turned into a voucher program. You know, once again, my opponent wants to turn Medicare into a voucher program to privatize it. You know, Medicare works. It's more cost effective than private insurance, and it is it has a lower rate of inflation than private insurance companies. Medicare works. Sending it again, interjecting a middleman to profit off what you've earned, what you've paid into, isn't the answer. Last thing, you know, third thing we should be addressing here is making sure that people can go to insurance companies that are outside the state. You know, currently, if you want to buy insurance, you have to buy, you know, you have a very limited pool from your within your state. You should be able to go on a nationwide search and get health insurance.
Well, that idea was suggested many years ago when the Affordable Care Act was being, you know, brought up and then eventually passed. That was one of the ideas that was believed that could bring down people's premium costs is by opening up the market a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you know, competition is a good thing, and if we can, you know, have a greater pool of providers, you would see. I believe as long as we made sure that the quality was there, I believe that it would result in some cost savings here.
If the next legislature and the next president come out and say that, all right, we've got a solution how to fix this, let's go single payer, would you be voting for it?
That's not realistic. We're not going to see, you know, look, we got to stop playing politics with healthcare. And what we've got to do is roll up our sleeves and instead of trying to score political points, we've got to fix this system. That's, you know, again, it's allowing Medicare to negotiate with drug companies. It's making sure Medicare doesn't get turned into a voucher program. It's allowing people to go across state lines for health insurance. And also, we've got to do some paperwork administrative reform. You know, I mean, I know when I go to the doctor and I come back, even just for just a simple physical, I get, you know, 8 letters in the mail. This is not a bill. This is not a bill. This is not. Well, then there's a bill. You know, I mean, I'm healthy and I'm, you know, I'm not ill, and I have a hard time sorting through my own paperwork on healthcare. We've got to streamline administrative and billing.
Okay. All right. Bring it a little bit closer to home. We've had some changes in our energy, policy or plan anyways, for up here. They're shutting down the White Pine Electric Power Plant. They're going to be building a couple of new power generating facilities in the Upper Peninsula. I'm hearing that one of them may end up being in Berega, so very close here to us. But there's a concern because those power units aren't supposed to be on until 2020.
Correct.
We're going to lose the White Pine Electric Power Plant. American Transmission Company is going to be carrying the load until then. So some people are concerned that without that sort of, you know, bench player there, the White Pine Power Plant, that in the case of a major power outage like we just recently had, that our area, specifically the Keweenaw, you know, could be sort of left out in the cold.
Yeah, I mean, I oppose closing that plant down, closing that generating plant down. We need redundancy. You know, like you just said, we have a couple new plants coming online, but they won't be online until 2020. What's the rush here? We need to make sure that we have reliable and affordable power. That plant does offer and is important going forward until 2020. It was scheduled to be closed down at 2020, and they just they sped that up. I'm opposed to that. Again, what's important here is that we need to make sure that we have reliable and redundant systems here.
Is it too late to do anything?
I mean, the election's coming up. I was in, you know, I spoke with the leaders in Ontonagon there, and they are appealing to the Public Utilities Commission. I've been staying in touch with Scott Dianda and others about this issue, but they are appealing to the Public Utility Commission.
Is there any chance that the Upper Peninsula will ever become just totally energy independent?
Well, I think we should start working towards that. You know, look, we're in this jam right now, paying the second highest rates in the country because our leaders didn't think 5, 10, 15, 20 years ahead. You know, we need to start I think investing in renewable energy here. You know, energy independence is, you know, through renewable sources would be, I think, a big help to our costs. You know, whether, you know, when you are, when you with, whether it's natural gas or coal or some other fuel, you're still dependent upon global market forces. And you're still dependent upon the cost of global, you know, the cost of the market. If we can bring renewable energy in here, we'll, number one, be energy, and you know, we'll create jobs. We can lower the cost of power, and you know, at the same time, you know, have a sustainable, you know, ecologically friendly power source. We got to bring costs down.
That would definitely be a good thing. Now, as far as jobs, you were mentioning that you had some ideas, or at least some, you were supportive of some ideas that we could increase, you know, maybe some job opportunities, economic improvement for Northern and Upper Peninsula.
Absolutely. There's, you know, look, that's the third thing that we need to focus on here, is, and the most important thing that we need to focus on is we need to build an Upper Peninsula where our children and grandchildren can stay here and succeed. We're losing too many of our kids and our grandkids to downstate or out of state for education or job opportunities. We can build a place where our families can stay here and succeed, but it takes, again, investments. One, we need to bring high-speed internet and mobile cell phone service to every corner of the Upper Peninsula. You know, we're massively moving as an economy where people can live and work wherever they choose. Nearly a third of the workforce is either doing that or now or has the ability to. That is only going to increase. And when people can live and work wherever they want, they're going to choose where it's beautiful. And that's where we can compete and win. We need to bring high-speed internet. Not to mention, you know, our children are being left behind. You know, these elementary schools and high schools and junior highs are now issuing tablets to students. And many students are going home without, you know, without internet connection at home and or affordable internet connection. So we've got to bring high-speed internet, mobile cell phone service. Number two, we need to invest in our infrastructure. That means we need a new Soo Lock. We need to finally get that funded. We need energy. We need to bring energy costs down. Businesses won't locate where the cost of electricity is the second highest in the nation. We've got to bring our energy costs down. We need to invest in our roads and our bridges here. We've got, in many ways, a crumbling infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, and others, other things we need to start investing in. Another thing we need to start thinking about is how do we have a competitive advantage over every other state and over every other country, and that is 21% of the world's fresh water is right here. We need to show the world how to use and protect fresh water. The same way that Stanford University created Silicon Valley, or Nashville has country music, or Los Angeles has the entertainment industry, Houston has oil and gas, New York's got the stock market. We have 21% of the world's fresh water right here. We need to show the world how to use and protect it. We need to create a freshwater institute and start competing for those research dollars that are being spent on a worldwide basis. Let me give you two things here. One, we know in our lifetime, fresh water will be the most valuable natural resource in the history of mankind. Number two, in the next 50 years, I would argue that over $1 trillion will be spent trying to understand how to use and protect fresh water. Manufacturers are trying to figure out how you use less water and make more products. Farmers are trying to figure out how you grow more crop using less water per acre. The military is trying to figure out how do you move more troops using less water. Energy industry is trying to figure out how do you extract energy out of the ground using less water. If we can provide those answers, we'll do two things. One, we'll have an entirely new economy here, and two, we'll protect our Great Lakes.
How do you feel climate change is going to play into how that future plays out?
Well, it's playing out before our eyes. I mean, I think, and you know, look, not to be too dramatic here, but in the next 20 years, nations will be going to war over fresh water. We need to be part of the solution here, part of the answer. You know, when you ask yourself, again, over $1 trillion are going to be spent trying to figure out how to use and protect fresh water. Let me ask you a question. What should our share of that $1 trillion be?
Well, we should have the bulk of it. It's ours. Well, not ours, but we live here.
We should, you know, we should at a minimum get the percentage of equal to our holdings. I'm not talking about selling our water. I want to be very, very clear. Nor am I talking about making water a commodity. We lose when that happens. But we need to be become the engineering and the science and the manufacturing hub for the use and protection of fresh water. We do that, we can create an entirely new economy here.
Well, I fully agree. It's always been kind of perplexing the time that I've lived here, considering that, you know, people say that we're so isolated. And I understand that, you know, in a way that we are, but they did pretty good, you know, back in the boomtown days of, you know, finding a way to get in past the isolation. So, you know, why is our location now a detriment, you know, when we're still have, you know, all these natural resources that are in our backyard?
And it never was a detriment for our forefathers. You know, we led the world in international trade, fur trade, in the 1700s. Then we led the world in mining, copper and iron ore. Then we led the world in lumber. Now, all of that had one thing in common, and that is, it was our forefathers coming here and saying, okay, how do we make a place, you know, where we can stay and succeed? Well, what are our assets? Well, we've got great land, we've got the Great Lakes, and we've got hardworking, smart, innovative people. How do you put those combinations together to build a place where we can stay here and succeed? And they did it. They did it, and we still have the same assets, and we can do it again.
The campaign so far between you and Jack Bergman, are you satisfied the way that's been going, or is it, I mean, there has been a lot of stones thrown back and forth during this time. How do you feel about just the way it's gone?
Look, I want to be very, you know, direct here. You know, my opponents are lying to the voters, you know, making up lies about me and my family, about where we live. I'm the fifth generation of my family to live in Kalkaska County. You know, they're doing that to distract the voters from the fact that they want to privatize Social Security. They want to privatize Medicare. They want to privatize the VA. You know, these are, you know, when you don't have issues to run on, you practice the politics of personal destruction. I'm out there telling voters who I am and what I'm going to do for them. And when you don't have those issues, when you want to privatize Social Security and send it off to Wall Street, you're left with very, you know, when voters understand that, they get very upset, and rightly so. I just think that we need to be talking about the issues here. This is where Jack Bergman and I, you know, strongly disagree. I do not think that sending our Social Security off to Wall Street is the answer. He does. You know, look, they're lying to you, distract you from two facts. One, they want to privatize Social Security, Medicare, and the VA. Number two, they're trying to confuse you with the fact that Jack Bergman retired to Louisiana in 2009.
And lives here now.
Yeah, he says he lives here now, yes. Okay. He also calls himself a snowbird.
We have a few of those.
Well, not as a member of Congress.
Now, your opponent will hang his hat on veterans issues, being a general, three-star general. Your stance, we have such a large percentage of our population are veterans up here in the Upper Peninsula. We're very proud of that. But that also means that, you know, issues, especially with the VA, mm-hmm. are very much on the forefront.
You know, this summer in Alpena, Jack Bergman went before an audience and said that we don't need all these big hospitals for veterans. Quote, it's a waste of money. You may want to ask him that when he's on the show here. Look, your VA benefits are important. You earn those VA benefits, and you're owed those benefits. I will work to make sure that we don't privatize our VA. Look, the American Legion, the VFW, the DAV, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, every major veterans organization in this country has come out opposed to privatization of the VA, and Jack Bergman wants to privatize it. You know, that's another area that we disagree. You know, we have to increase our PTSD funding. We're having, you know, we have to make sure that we have, look, the VA does need some reform. Absolutely. There's problems in accessibility, there's in availability and paperwork. I mean, it does need some strong reforms here, but the answer isn't, privatizing it. You earn those benefits, and I'll work to protect them.
Well, there certainly are a number of issues. Of course, we are limited with our time here to 25 minutes, and we're about up. I do want to give a chance, though, if somebody has a question for your campaign, what's the best way to deal with that?
Yeah, they can go to lonjohnson.com, lon, L-O-N, johnson.com.
You have general elections November 8th, and I encourage everybody to head out and vote. It's a very important election, not just on the presidential level either. So, Lon, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.